The Peer Advantage Podcast, episode 5008. Today we continue a chapter-by-chapter audio summary of a book entitled The Power of Peers, How the Company You Keep Drives Leadership, Growth, and Success by Leon Shapiro and Leo Battari. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at The Peer Advantage. You can find show notes and other useful resources over at the website, growgreat.com. Chapter 6 is entitled, Utilize a Smart Guide. The authors admit that they struggle to come up with a neutral, kind of an all-encompassing term for the person who is charged with leading a peer advisory group. The leader of an effective peer advisory group needs to be smart and seek to guide the group. So they came up with the term smart guide. The point of this chapter isn't to teach somebody how to be a smart guide, but rather to allow members and prospective group members to gain some insights into how these groups operate and why effective guidance is so critical to maximize the potential of the group. And I think it's a great chapter for a lot of reasons, none of the least of which is there are so many people who just don't have an experience in such a group and who really have questions about what does this even look like? How does this work? The authors point out, and they begin the chapter by talking about a smart guide in action. And co-author Leon Shapiro begins the chapter with the story of a business owner. Well, actually, he's a co-owner of a company with his brother. And the business has recently discovered a very serious inventory issue that is going to impact their biggest customer. Well, the chairperson of the group had some insight about the relationship of these two co-owners, these brothers. One of the brothers was a member of this person's group. And when the issue was brought before the group, the chairperson asked questions that prompted deeper discussions about how these two brothers were approaching running the business. Because, well, the chairperson had some insight in their dynamic as brothers and as co-owners. Well, by having this smart guide help navigate the discussion with the group, the business benefited more fully from the support of the peer advisory group. What is a great peer advisory group leadership? What does it look like? The authors state the challenge pretty simply, and just because it's simple to state does not mean that it's easy to execute. And here it is in the form of a question. How can you help your members be at their best, both inside and outside the group meeting, professionally and personally? How can you help your members be at their best, both inside and outside the group meeting, professionally and personally? Well, at the top of the list is having a passion for the work. And the authors spend considerable time talking about a group leader named Pat. Pat died in 2013 at the age of 98. Still actively leading his peer advisory groups. And many of the members had been with him for more than a decade. And his passion was evidenced by remaining engaged in that work as he was approaching the century mark of his life. Now, the interesting note about Pat is that he did not start leading a group until he was 73. He dies at the age of 98. That means he enjoyed doing this work for almost 25 years. And he regarded it as the most meaningful work of his life. And he had a pretty impressive resume. He wasn't just helping CEOs. He knew he was helping create jobs. He was helping families buy houses. He was helping companies support nonprofit causes. He knew that he was helping not just CEOs, not just executive teams, not just employees, not just customers, not just suppliers and vendors, but all of them. And it was work that went well beyond the top or the bottom line of a company's performance. Bula Network was formed when I left the C-suite after having run a particular company for almost 20 years. And as Tom Petty sings, it was time to move on. It was time to get going. Time for a new chapter. And that was back in 2008. Mostly, I wanted to help other businesses by way of consulting. That morphed into coaching, which led me and introduced me to the idea of peer advantage. Now, having never been involved in the formal work of peer advantage, it immediately clicked with me. I knew I was wired ideally for the work, so I set about to learn all that I could, and that was over 2 years ago. That led me to connecting with Leo Battari, a co-author of this book that we're going through, which led me to urge him to start his own podcast, which he did. It's called Year of the Peer. You can find it by going to yearofthepeer.com. Now, all the while, I was desperately wanting to enter this space because I had very much operated peer groups all of my adult career, but internal, a leadership team. And I wanted to enter this space in a new, different, albeit even in a small way, and to do it the way I felt was most suitable for the people that I really wanted to serve, and that is small to medium-sized business owners. I've worked with many CEOs and executives and leadership teams, but there's something unique about owners. They're operators, close to the work, with a point of view that resonates with me. I've been in that world. I've been in that world since I was a teenager. And my passions began to intersect. That is, this passion for small to medium-sized business coupled with my passion to help facilitate deep conversations where problem-solving and taking advantage of opportunity could really be enhanced. And that's how the peer advantage began. And it's why I am now full throttle ahead in seeking out small to medium business owners who want to experience the tremendous value of the peer advantage. Well, the peer advantage resonated so deeply with me because if faced with door number one, which I could enter and I could engage in a room full of hundreds of people, many of whom might be famous or exciting, or I could go behind door number two, behind which are going to be seven complete strangers who are willing to engage in deep conversation where we can all get to know each other better, I'm picking door number two every single time. And that also explains why I'm not attempting to build larger groups. I want to form groups of just seven so the conversations and the progress can happen more quickly, so the relationships can be forged that will positively impact every member of the group. Well, back to the book. Servant leadership. So in addition to passion, another common component of effective peer group leaders, aka smart guides, is servant leadership. Robert Greenleaf coined that term in 1970 in an essay entitled The Servant Leader. Well, Leo Battari, co-author of this book, The Power of Peers, he interviewed Kent Keith. Kent Keith served as CEO from 2007 to 2012 of what is now called the Robert K. Greenleaf Center. And Kent told Leo how servant leadership came to be. Mr. Greenleaf had worked at AT&T before he retired after 38 years. He retired in 1964. And toward the end of his career, he was a director of management research, responsible for training senior leaders of the company. Well, after he retired, he concluded that the power culture of leadership that he had known all of his career at AT&T, he didn't think it worked so well. He saw a better way, servant leadership. And in his model, the employees, they weren't there to make the leader successful, which is what the whole power structure was about, for the leader to look good. Instead, he saw it where the leader was there to provide resources and guidance to help the employees be successful. And today, experts in leadership, they recognize the important shift that Greenleaf made. And as Kent said, quote, "Most servant leaders are only known within their organizations and communities. They are not trying to be famous. They are trying to make a difference. And they do." Next, being a good listener. So take passion, add to it servant leadership spirit, and let's add to it being a good listener. That means more than just hearing the words. It requires the ability to hear and understand what's being said. Now, you can best know what someone's true needs are when you're able to listen and understand them. Great questions and fierce conversations. So now let's pile on another component, the ability to get to the heart of somebody's needs. And that requires asking good, even great, questions. Susan Scott wrote a book, I think it was in 2002, entitled Fierce Conversations. And in the book, she describes the 7 steps to fierce conversations. Number 1, determining the most pressing issue. Number 2, clarifying the issue. Number 3, reviewing the current impact of that issue. Number 4, deciding what will happen if nothing changes. What's the price to be paid? Number 5, determining one's personal contribution. What have you done so far? Number 6, describing the ideal outcomes. What would you like to see happen? Number 7, committing to action. Armed with all of the above, what are you going to do? Now, in chapter 7 of the book, The Power of Peers, which will be next time, we're going to learn more about how to ask good questions. Well, next, the authors dive into reaching your own conclusions. The best group leaders think of themselves as coaches, not consultants. And here's the distinction that they make. Consultants are problem solvers who recommend solutions, while coaches, they help you reach your own conclusions. My career over the past decade has morphed from consulting to coaching, and so this progression to becoming what the authors call a smart guide is fitting for my experience, my expertise, and my natural wiring, not to mention my passion for it. Well, there's a lot of evidence, a lot of scientific evidence to support the idea that whenever we employ a solution or a decision or a plan or a strategy or anything else that we conclude ourselves, we're more likely to follow through and be successful implementing that thing. I mean, that sense of ownership of a solution, it's important. Relationship building. The best smart guides, write the authors, have an ability to help group members build relationships. They cite a story of a peer group leader who conducted a meeting. They had just had their group meeting. About 3 days later, one of the members calls her up, has got a real pressing issue, a critical issue that has come up since their meeting 3 days ago. And he's fretting about it. And he really is, he's wanting to meet with some of the members of the group, but he doesn't want to wait until the next meeting. And so she asks him, well, what do you want to do? And he says, well, I'd like to get together with a few of the members who I think have the most experience in this area to help me. And so he asks her, can you help me make that meeting happen? Well, instead of doing that, she suggested that he reach out, that he contact those members directly. The point isn't that she wasn't willing to help him. The point wasn't really her role even. The point was the member's need. This business owner had a need, and he had an ability to forge ahead. He didn't need her. He didn't need her permission. These members had a relationship with one another, and they have a relationship with each other when the smart guide performs well and realizes this isn't all about me. This isn't all about the leader. This isn't all about the smart guide. This is about the group. The authors then revisit a passion for the work again, and this really resonates throughout the whole chapter. Passionate leaders have an impact on people. Come on, you and I both know passionate people just have an impact on us. I mean, all you got to do is think about the people in your life. You can think about teachers, mentors who had some big impact on your life. We are attracted to and we are more deeply engaged by passionate people. We can tell when people love what they do. We can tell when people are really into it. We can tell when people really care about us and they're passionate about it. Well, then the chapter moves into the group leadership structure. People may tend to think that a peer advisory group leader, well, they're at the center of it all, right? It's all about the leader. In the case of Boodle Network, the peer advantage, it might all about me. No. And we tend to think of a leader as, okay, well, they're the person in front of the room. They're the person standing in the middle of the group. Yeah. The leaders that the authors speak about and that they spoke with said you can't lead a peer group that way. Well, not for very long. The ideal group structure is not one that puts the focus on the leader, but it's where the attention is on the members and on their interaction with one another. It's about the group. Triads. The best smart guides aren't at the head, but they're just a member of the group. And they have a diagram in the book, and if you would draw a big triangle, and then if you were to divide that triangle into four spaces, then you would have this triad. And in that diagram, the smart guide, a member, and the group are at the three corners. And the relationship is smack dab in the middle. And triads become essential for effective communication, certainly when we're talking about a peer advisory group. The smart guide ensures that the group understands what's going on, what's being said, that we're all on the same page, and the smart guide always has the back of the relationship. Got everybody's back. Now, everything can't go through the leader, though. Not if the group is going to stay together and not if the group is going to be effective. Sustaining the group requires the smart guide to help ensure that every member and that the entire group all bear the responsibility to hold up their part of this relationship. Reinforcing group norms. The leader can't be wishy-washy about this. There has to be a measure of assertiveness that is required to maintain the group norms and to ensure that the group culture is positive. You know, enforcing things like confidentiality and safety and respect. Developing a shared understanding of expectations and responsibilities is an essential part of the smart guide's responsibility. But the authors go on to talk about creating an atmosphere for learning. Group meetings can be serious, tackling some really heavy issues. Smart guides reported the importance of interjecting some fun. And you might think, well, business owners or CEOs, they're not going to appreciate that. That's not true. It's just not true. We all appreciate a bit of fun. And after all, in meeting with a group, whether it's in person or virtual and online as the groups I'm building, this is their time out of the office to work on their business. And yes, to have a bit of fun in the process. Smart guides create different ways to interject some fun into their group meetings. One group leader that the book cites mentioned creating this wall space where the members, as they came together physically, they could hang anything of interest that they had come across since the last meeting. And they could also celebrate their findings together. And they also celebrated their milestones, including birthdays or anniversaries. And that just brought the group closer together. Well, the summary is true smart guides lead with a guiding hand of a servant leader. They listen. They ask good questions. They build camaraderie. They consider themselves coaches instead of consultants. And they wear their passion for their role on their sleeves. And as we said in the next chapter 7, armed with the right peers, a safe and confidential environment, and excellent guidance. The authors are now going to explore in Chapter 7 what's behind the power of these groups and how peer advantage becomes possible. Are you a small to medium business owner who finds all this talk of the peer advantage intriguing? I would hope so. Then email me at randycantrell@BULANetwork.com. randycantrell@BULANetwork.com. There's links over at the website. Just go to the website, growgreat.com. Find episode 5008. You'll find links and show notes for today's episode. If you can see the value of being surrounded by other business owners who are committed to growth and learning and improvement, if you could see yourself being surrounded by other business owners that want to grow their company like you want to grow yours, and they want to grow their leadership and their ownership like you want to grow yours, then I would love to speak with you, and I would love to learn more about you and your company. I appreciate you listening. And next time we will tackle Chapter 7, which is entitled Foster Valuable Interaction. Now go out and make it a great day. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. All kinds of ways you can do that, and the links are over at the website, growgreat.com. Thanks for listening. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Greetings from inside the Ella Studio.